Sherry, can you hear us? Okay. Can everybody online introduce themselves? We'll start with Paul Williams.
Hello, this is Paul Williams with Engineering Northwest.
Right, Councillor Young.
Yep, Councillor Young, just listening in today to the road mod discussion.
Okay, let's see. Dan, how can you be on there and here at the same time? Houston?
Houston, Ajo, Ajo Construction.
Les? Les, you're muted.
Sorry, I didn't catch the name. Les McDonald, Clark Regional Wastewater District.
Thank you. Mr. Archer?
Yes, hello, Chair. Steve Archer, Deputy Prosecuting Attorney, Clark County.
Great.
Observing.
Thank you. Sadie Neglitch.
Sadie Neglitch, Hayward Yaskowski and Associates. Just listening.
Thank you. Ms. Friedberg.
Ingrid Friedberg with Tappany, and I'm also here with Alexa Lee of Tappany.
Thank you. Ms. Hinton.
I'm Nikki Hinton with Hinton Development.
Okay, Ms. Lane.
Just visiting. This is Jackie Lane.
As you are every month. Thank you. I think that's it.
And I guess we got Sherry already.
Sherry, you want to introduce yourself?
Sherry Jones, Southwest Washington Contractors Association.
Thank you.
All right. So sorry about the audio there for those online. Just as a reminder, this DEEB meeting is being recorded and the audio will be posted on the DEEB's website. So first on our agenda is to review and adopt the minutes from our last October meeting. Has everyone had a chance to review those minutes?
Mr. Chair, I have, and without correction, I move for adoption.
A second.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Anyone opposed? All right, passes. And now let's review upcoming events. Victoria.
Okay, for the month of November, it looks like on November 4th, there was a county council meeting for the fall supplemental budget. There's some contradicting language. One area said exclusive, and then in another area it said non-exclusive franchise for EZ Fiber and then Nord LLC. The 2026 to 2031 transportation and then the 2026 annual construction program is an agenda item, along with the 2026 capital improvements plan for the Public Parks and Lands Division. On November 18th, there will be a county council meeting for the local homeless plan, housing plan. On November 5th, which was yesterday, there was a county council work session for the Columbia River Economic Development Council update and conservation futures funding proposals and proposal and allowable uses. Wednesday, November 12th, there will be a work session for the 2026 annual budget, review of the final ag resources land study, along with the Vancouver UGA urban growth employment land expansion. For the planning commission work sessions for November, this evening at 5:30, there will be a comp plan overview and housing for all planning tool, HAPT review. And there's no public hearing scheduled as of November 4th.
Thank you very much. Are there any member announcements?
Mr. Chair, I have just a couple quick ones. One, I have been reviewing the draft multifamily or housing code, mixed use ordinance, code, and the amenity. Multifamily amenity codes. I've provided some comments to staff on that. I'm currently in have a dialogue going with Susan Ellinger on that, and we'll bring that back some of the findings at our next meeting. And I think I've been keeping most of, if not all of the D members appraised on what our comments have been. So, and then the second one is, I don't know if we ever closed the loop, Mr. Davis, as far as the Clark County Health Department development review letters is for fully complete. I know that you had mentioned in a previous email that it was only required by code for projects proposing septic and wells. Have we landed the plane that they are not required for fully complete for other projects that are proposing sewer and public water?
That is correct. However, there is the potential for existing systems to be on some of those sites, and in those cases, it would still be required. We have been requiring it. I'm not sure for how long. Primarily, my understanding is because at some point in the past, the health department requested it.
Yep.
In all cases.
Fully understood. I think the concern that we have right now is that the health department's taking up to 8 weeks or longer to get the development review letters out. That can hold up our applications. We just want to make sure that we can go ahead and apply. And then once we get the DR letters, that we can go ahead and submit those in to staff, maybe before we get a staff report decision.
I certainly think we can work with that.
Okay.
If the delays get longer and it actually starts holding up the decision timeline, then we'll have to delve into it deeper.
Okay, very good. I just want to kind of close the loop on that. Thank you.
I think we are still hoping to get somebody from the health department, maybe at our December meeting, where we can dive into that in a lot more detail.
Correct. Miles has been out of the office, and he's due to return on November 12th. So I will be speaking with him once he returns.
And I guess just to kind of circle back on your first one, too, I know I've seen the emails on that. I know we had a motion at our last meeting to send a memo to the Planning Commission. Did that get sent? I think I was trying to remember. I can't.
I did send it directly after, yes, to Jeffrey, and he was going to print it out and distribute it to the.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, I think she sent back his response to us.
Right. Okay. Are there any other member announcements? All right, hearing none. Next item on the agenda is a presentation on the road modifications by Dan Caleb. Take it away.
Share my screen. So, again, I'm Dan Kaler, Division Manager for Development Engineering. I've been here roughly a little over 6 weeks now. So my goal today is kind of maybe share some of my discovery thus far, my first 6 weeks, maybe serve as kind of an intro for the rest of this afternoon's discussion. But primarily, my work with road modifications is kind of reviewing some of the past decisions, looking at, you know, future requests, participating in the road mod review team and the reconsideration process. So I'm still kind of harvesting all this information, but I think I have maybe a starting point to maybe begin our discussion for today. And I'm going to use, it's called the story map type of application, but it kind of gives us the flexibility, if we wanted to dive in some of the web maps that are available. I did have a variety of examples of past road mod decisions that I thought if I had more time, we could probably cover in greater depth, but I'm going to do pretty much an overview of some of these past decisions and also look at a lot of the code requirements. So the topic of today is, you know, the road modification. So I think we all know that it's a method to maybe deviate from county code requirements where conditions are either impractical or impossible to comply with county code. And we have the three classifications of a minor, technical, or a major classification. And I do want to draw attention, you know, to the code section that talks about the approval criteria. There's really three sections, and actually I can either reduce or enlarge the font. Is everybody okay with? Okay. Okay. So, you know, the first section talks about the required factors for consideration. You know, I highlighted, you know, public safety was probably a key one, as well as functionality of the modification, but it also involves other characteristics of durability, cost of maintenance, and the appearance of the modification. And another, you know, factor to consider was, you know, advancing the goals of the comprehensive plan. So I look at this as more of a balance of, you know, encouraging infill development while at the same time, you know, ensuring that we have, you know, safe transportation networks. Thirdly, you know, the approval criteria looks at what's the minimum necessary, you know, to alleviate any hardship. And also it involves the concept of maybe looking at or considering innovative concepts or benefits of low impact development. And then the last of these factors was, you know, that any self-imposed hardship was not really a reason to grant a modification. And the next section of the code, I thought more is looking at kind of the conditions, the relevant conditions. So certainly it's dependent upon the site characteristics. There's going to be areas where, you know, it's just not practical to obtain compliance with county road construction requirements. And the goal is to have, you know, the minimum change necessary to, you know, if it was enacted, it wouldn't result in any hardship. Certainly we want to consider alternate designs, you know, that are either going to be as effective or even superior to current code. I know in looking at some of the past examples, there's alternative payment designs where due to maybe some poor soil conditions, they either increased, you know, the type of base course material or surface coat. And fourthly, there's that concept of proportionality and, you know, ensuring that whatever requirement that they're, that code requires is not disproportionate to the impacts that they're creating. And then the last, at least of those conditions to consider, was that there'd be some consistency, particularly with any adjoining development that, you know, might necessitate a modification just to ensure that there's kind of that connectivity with any existing features. And then the third approval criteria is more a kind of the planning goals, making certain that we're compliant with Growth Management Act, you know, focusing on working within buildable lands, and as part of that encouragement of the density, also ensuring that we have sufficient infrastructure to support population growth. So that is a brief overview of at least a relevant code, at least for the approval criteria. And I thought next I could at least walk through some examples of each of these classification of road modifications, the first of which is a minor road modification. And here are the guidelines, you know, it has to address all of these criteria that, you know, it wouldn't involve any engineering analysis. This is kind of more the more simplistic tier of the modifications. Does not involve any safety or offsite impacts, requires minimal review to approve, does not involve the public for, you know, any type of public interest or impact of a road mod decision. And historically, it's shown that this type of modification, you know, hasn't had any adverse impacts in the past. And I do have one example. This is a rural residential parcel where they were seeking relief from site distance. And maybe I'll even give you an example kind of our staff reports as well as the narrative. Let's see. And maybe I'll bump this up a little bit. So with our staff report, you know, upon receiving the applicant's narrative, typically we, you know, we try to fully document what was portrayed. And actually, well, this first section, we typically list the approval criteria, and then, you know, we try to document what the applicant portrayed so far as our rationale for the modification. We also, you know, talk about the approval criteria within the body of the staff report. And then usually there's some type of summary finding. So it's in the staff evaluation section. And so this is an instance of relief from site distance. We address that. And then oftentimes there's going to be even some conditions as part of their approval. I think this one had some conditions. And then typically, you know, from the applicant side, we'll get a narrative, and usually there's either some type of diagram, field photo, or, you know, traffic study. But this is an example of this, of a diagram in the instance where they couldn't obtain driveway access to the north due to some environmental constraints. Likewise, they weren't able to connect to this basket flat road to the south because of environmental strains. So their approach was to kind of go laterally through an adjoining parcel where they acquired an easement, even though at that point they still didn't meet site distance requirements, but through their narrative, you know, they justified their rationale for the road modification. And this is an example where it was approved. And then the next tier, I guess the level of complexity, is our technical road modifications. And these typically, on our behalf, the development engineering team, we certainly is a more complex type of review for us. And the key thing, at least from the applicant side, the guidelines is there's typically one or more of this criteria here where it does involve some degree of engineering analysis. It does have some type of relationship to public safety. And oftentimes it does require multiple staff. That's one of the reasons why we have our road modification review team, to get input not only from development engineers, but also from planners and traffic engineers. And the technical road modifications do have some degree of public interest, and they often involve the concept of either proportionality or nexus issues. And I do have an example of proportionality here. And I think I have two examples here. The first example was a request for relief from frontage improvements, and maybe I can open the web map here. This was an example where code requirements required half street frontage improvements. There we go. I'll zoom in here. I believe this is 131st Street. This is the air gas site. So we were requiring half street, with improvements across this east-west section. However, there was at the southwest corner of the parcel, there was some fiber optic utilities that, certainly were more costly apparently to relocate. So as part of their modification request, they were seeking relief due to the proportionality of the cost for the entire width of frontage improvements and just only go up until maybe the westerly 10 feet with frontage improvements. So the initial decision, at least from the county's perspective, is we did want to have full width frontage improvements. However, it was subsequently appealed. In this case, it went to a hearing examiner where they concurred with the applicant that the frontage improvements could end at that location, 10 feet just shy of the west corner there. And another technical road mod example was subdivision parcel length. This is Four Creeks South, and they were seeking relief from site distance. And this was an example of a post-decision modification. So I think it was in 2021 or 2022, there was a road modification stipulating, a site distance requirement that connected one of the local streets to Northeast 29th Avenue here. And I think one of the conditions was, establishing 400-foot site distance for that connecting intersection. And I think upon maybe seeing the construction plans that the county had for Northeast 29th, they realized that they couldn't obtain that 400-foot site distance. And through some subsequent conversation and realizing that if they did obtain that 400-foot site distance, it'd be requiring substantial modifications to the plans for Northeast 29th Avenue. Through, I think, some subsequent transportation analysis, it was deemed that at least for the northbound speeds, the traffic or the site distance for that traffic speed was adequate. And this did result in an approval of this technical road modification. Again, this was an example of a post-decision where it occurred after the fact of the initial approval of the development. The next example is for major road modifications, kind of the highest level of complexity. These typically require additional input as part of their applicant's request, certainly more extensive engineering analysis. And I think so far as the criteria or the guidelines, typically, has extensive public impacts and that might involve a higher level of proportionality or nexus issues. Does require extensive engineering analysis. There's a potential for, public safety impacts, and as well as the potential to shift some of the improvement obligations to future development or the county, as well as potential impacts to future development patterns. as mentioned, does require significant county review time and documentation. It also could involve or might result in considerable public interest in the decision of that modification, and there very well could be some public policy implications. And the example, at least for a major road mod, is an industrial development. I forgot what street this was on, but is that 63rd, right? Yes. And I know in this instance, existing roadway, and it didn't, I guess, comply with requirements for the standard detail for, you know, the cross section. I think the center turn lane was a foot or two short of where it should have been. I think even the travel lanes were narrower than what they should have been. I think there's also a attached sidewalk that was narrower than what, you know, the standard detail drawings were showing. So they were seeking relief from the pavement width, as well as I think there was a concern or seeking relief for access for this type of roadway. There was a need for either channelization for turning movements or a median. So in this case, through the narrative, they demonstrated that the pavement width, you know, was sufficient. It kind of was still functional. And I think through some of the conditions, the city or the county approved the at least via conditions, the need to get or obtain relief from some of the access that wasn't an immediate need for any type of channelization or median construction. So this was an example of a major road modification that was approved. And then another common question that we've had recently is standalone modifications. And I know there's a section of the code which specifies that they're not associated with any type of land use application or decision. So historically, these have been more existing structures where they're just seeking to have maybe a different access point to a county road. The first example here is where was a manufactured home. And I think in this case, they did approach the abutting property here. As you can see, there's an existing driveway. They're attempting to have a joint driveway through an easement. The abutting property owner was not willing to provide that easement, so that they didn't have any legal access at this point. But they did justify through their narrative that through their selected access point, they would have acceptable site distance for that driveway access point. The other example was an existing structure. They were seeking a secondary drive access, and I think it was to serve this, I think it's a barn structure to the south here. And I know it didn't meet the driveway spacing requirements. And I think through their modification process, there was even like, I know an on-site visit by county staff, and it was deemed that they do have the capability to access the barn through some internal, you know, driveways to get to that point. And it was deemed that having a secondary driveway access point, you know, would not be approved. So this is an example of a standalone that was denied as part of their relief from driveway spacing. Next, I do want to at least touch on our procedures. And this is, you know, a section of code where we, regardless of the type of modification, you know, the expectation is that they're going to be supporting technical information. Like I said, typically it's a narrative followed by some type of either diagram, field photo, or even traffic study. And in the case where the modification is associated with an underlying land use application, there's a couple options, particularly if it's a minor road modification. There's no subsequent application necessary. It just can be processed as part of the land use application. However, if it was either a technical or a major road modification, there is a separate application known as a EVR, an engineering variance review, that's necessary. And that happens in tandem with the underlying land use review. And as mentioned, there can be road mod requests for post-decision. So an example here is where I think it was with that technical road modification where there was a prior decision and they realized maybe they couldn't conform to those conditions, so that they're seeking a post-decision modification. If it is of a minor nature, it can happen with as part of the engineering plan review. However, if it's a technical or major post-decision modification, there's a couple paths here. I guess the key thing is determining applicability for a post-decision review. And the fourth type of procedural option here is for a standalone. So this is, as shown here, it's not associated with a land use application decision, and it can happen independently of any land use application. Now, I do know, I think it was in April, there was a discussion from my predecessor on our workflow, and I think it was presented as part of the advisory board meeting in April. And I know since that time, there was a key change. I think I have it up here. And maybe I'll just start it here at the top. But we have one version that's public facing on our webpage, but there was a key change I at least want to illustrate today. But kind of following up on our procedures, the key thing here in this upper left is the decision point of whether it's a land use project or not. And if it is a land use project, whether it's a minor or a technical or major road modification. If it's a technical or major modification that kind of follows the path of this leftmost column here, and the development engineering staff, we verify that the submittal is complete. And then if so, we complete our review. We prepare a staff report. And then the bottom here, we conduct a modification meeting. And this is kind of our opportunity to kind of look at the narrative, evaluate it, discuss it as a team. And the outcome is really a finding of either approval or denial. And really the key step that we've implemented over the last couple months is that we do offer the applicant, in the case of a denial, the opportunity for a reconsideration meeting. And this is kind of their opportunity to attend. They can present the narrative and kind of walk us through what they thought was the rationale or the justification for their modification request. And I've been at a couple of those. I find them helpful, particularly maybe having a dialogue where we can understand the rationale. And a lot of times the applicant might understand, well, what is a solution that I could use to, of a minimal nature, obtain a modification support. So that's the key change, I think, since maybe what you've heard at a prior meeting, that we now have the option for these reconsideration meetings. And another, I guess, more recent question was dealing with the timeliness. I know the question was, why is it taking so long? And I think as I looked at the code, and I think Brent has helped me kind of identify specific sections of code, but the key thing is if the underlying road modification is tied with the land use development, then certainly it extends beyond a typical 21-day timeline for a type one type of decision. So, usually if it's any type of subdivision, site plan, or short plat, it typically is going to prolong, into that typical 78-day type of timeline for administrative decisions for that development. So that's an overview, kind of at least, like I said, my discovery thus far. I'm hopeful that it at least can maybe provide some insight as to maybe where we could go from here. I'm all in favor of improving something if you feel that scenario that we can improve our process. So certainly I want to be open to any ideas and suggestions you may have.
Great. Thank you, Dan. Oh, Mr. Jardine.
Good afternoon, David Jardine, Public Works. I just wanted to make sure that the record was clear, and I need to apologize to Dan because I did kind of that preliminary review of what he was going to present. But that minor road mod example that he used had site distance in there. That was either classified wrong or typed wrong or had the wrong title on it. Okay. Any safety element is a technical road mod. So site distance specifically, because that requires an engineer's validation that site distance is what it needs to be or that it will ultimately be safe. So let me give you an example of a minor road mod. A minor road mod is typically where I typically see a road mod in a minor case is for like an access to a public right-of-way, a driveway. So you can't meet driveway spacing, and that's the only road mod that is on that is requesting relief. The parcel width is not wide enough to move that driveway anywhere along its frontage to meet a driveway spacing requirement. So you get a minor road mod. There's no other choice. You've got to put access onto the property somewhere. So as long as everything else remains compliant, site distance, driveway width, you know, all that kind of stuff, the driveway spacing component can be a minor. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for clarifying. I know another example of minor, and I don't know if it still is access to a collector or arterial when there's no other access available to a lower classification of road. Yep. Very good. Oh, well, thanks, Dan. Boy, you kind of took up some of what I was going to happen to talk about today. So I appreciate that. I'm going to, I do have a document. Shannon, I don't know if you want to go ahead and pull that up. I did provide a quick agenda for what we were going to discuss from the Deeb's point of view today. I did provide a little bit of a background for those that weren't familiar with the road modification process. In the opening section, and I did provide a section of the entire code for those that don't have it. So I'm going to move on to what has been done in the past. I know that there's been a lot of talk about how we need to improve the road modification process, and I'm moderating today because I'm a little more removed from the road modification process. Yes, I do participate in development review applications, but not being an engineer, I have prepared and had my modifications reviewed by engineers, but don't directly prepare them myself. So the second part of what we're talking about here today is what has been done in the past as far as past improvements. We've had this discussion for, gosh, now decades. You know, we're going on 20 years of Deeb, and I think that, you know, it's always been kind of a topic of conversation. But one thing that came up is we've just talked about were the minor road modifications, the minor deviations where, you know, it's submitted, you know, it's part of an application. It's in the narrative. There's no fee. And that was great. That happened, I probably, 10, 12 years ago or so. And then there was the opportunity about 5-6 years ago to submit a draft road modification to staff for them to at least get eyes on it and provide at least an idea. And why this is important is that a project may live or die based on a road modification and it being approved. And if we can at least get an idea that it passes the smell test with staff, that they're an idea that, yes, this appears that staff could support this. Maybe they provide a little bit, say, hey, you need to address this a little bit further. But that was very valuable. And I think it was rare that we didn't submit a draft road modification, at least in my experience, when we knew that it could have either a significant impact on the project going forward or not, or a significant cost impact to the project. Yes, the project could move forward, but if we don't get this road modification, there's going to be a big offsite impact or something like that that we would need to address. And then way back when, there was the ability to actually discuss the merits of a road modification with development engineering staff. Able to, you know, go into their office, sit down. This is, of course, way pre-COVID, and go through it and then discuss the merits of it. And I'm glad to hear that there's a reconsideration process that's looking to be implemented. Now, some of the current issues that I'll move on to next are, there's a wide variety of issues. There isn't any one type of road modification that we could land the plane on, that where you could make a code change, even though we would like to see that happen. We've been talking about that for years. The GIN group put out a memorandum last year. I'm hoping you had a chance to review it, that went straight to County Council. And in it, they outlined several areas of possible improvement. They talked about the road mod committee. You have since indicated in the code where there could have to be multiple staff and maybe different departments review any particular technical or major road modification. However, with the road modification, there comes a whole sense of this secrecy that I think that the development community has. We don't know who's on it. Staff is very hesitant to let us know who's on there. We do know that it does, you know, involve someone with pedestrian bicycles, somebody with, from Public Works, somebody from traffic, somebody, you know, it's this planning. But we're not able, the development review committee, much like a pre-application conference, aren't able to attend these meetings to be able to provide any more guidance based on what might come up with those discussions. And then once you hear back from staff, DE staff, whoever engineer has been assigned to your project, it says roadmap committee has said that they can't support approval of this road mod. And this may or may not be a draft road mod or a real road mod. And so and sometimes they will provide information and say, hey, we need more analysis on this, that, or the other thing. So that analysis is provided. And it's maybe hit or miss that the roadmap committee actually reviews that additional information. There's been instances to where additional information has been provided and it hasn't made it to the roadmap committee. And so therefore they just have not been able to see that information. And then the fact that the roadmap committee decision is, I mean, in a final format during a development review application, their decision is final. And what we've heard is that the only solution to that is to appeal the decision. And oftentimes it's that additional information that was submitted, that additional empirical information that was submitted that could have swayed, you know, the committee to say, oh gosh, yes, it does appear that this can be supported by staff, yet a decision has already been rendered. And then, you know, the fourth item on here, I asked the question a month or two ago, what was so special about Clark County that warranted a committee to review road modifications? I see that there is a section in the code that talks about that, but most jurisdictions have one, maybe two people that review these modifications and they're expeditiously approved, or you don't meet the criteria, you need to provide additional information. So there's a continuing dialogue between the review person at that jurisdiction and the applicant or the applicant's consultant, so that you have a back and forth. And I don't see a whole lot of that. We have not seen a whole lot of that back and forth take place. We have been able to, at least in my experience, have discussions with staff. I can think of several discussions with Mr. Jardine and others where we have talked about the merits of what we're proposing, what additional information might need to be provided. But it seems like lately that ability has been maybe a little curtailed for one reason or another. Some of the other issues now is that they're from what we've heard, and correct me if I'm wrong, but there are no draft review of draft road modifications anymore. We've also seen a significantly higher level of denials in road modifications, where the same road modification on a different project several years ago was approved, and now it's, you know, a very similar situation. Now it's denied. And denials, even when empirical evidence has been provided and shown that the roadway will continue, the roadway network will continue to work to standard or better than standard with what we're proposing. I have a personal one that was the situation, and yet the road modification was still denied. And then getting justification for said denial from staff so that we understand what it is that about, where are they landing the plane with reference to the code? as far as the denial of the road modification. And, you know, and even if they do approve a road modification, there can be some, you know, burdensome conditions of approval, and I can't, you know, or maybe some extraction of concessions. Now, this is purely hearsay. This is information that I'm hearing from here and there. And you know, I would rely on others to provide detailed information as far as, or examples of what those are. But really what it comes down to as far as the bottom line here is that we're finding more denials. We're unable to participate in the review process. If I'm doing a development review of some kind of site plan and there's something that's missing, I'm not meeting a code provision or something like that, planner's going to email me. Planner's going to pick up the phone and say, hey, by the way, Mike, this doesn't meet code. You can't do this. So I would hope that the same courtesy would be provided by staff from a road modification standpoint. In here, I've given you an opportunity here to have your say. Boy, you've provided a great background as far as not only the code, but also examples of each type of road modification. And I'm talking really fast, and the reason why I am is that I want to have the opportunity for public comment on this, or at least the D members first, and then public comment as far as their own examples. I'm hoping that the rest of this meeting will be that we'll all work together, that it won't be we won't be confrontational or anything like that. That what we want to do is we want to, you know, work together in this process. And it's, you know, I'm hoping, and this isn't the start of it, we're kind of in the middle of it, but it's gotten so much to a point that we have to devote an entire D meeting to road modifications. So, you know, there are, you know, some options that we could look at, some possible solutions. There needs to be a method for early decision making. There needs to be, you know, maybe there's some kind of, I need to back up here. You know, from the development community standpoint, yes, early decision making. And again, it goes back to the lack of transparency in that decision making. That comes right back to the road modification committee and the separation between the applicant and said committee. And again, the road modifications, a denial can significantly increase the cost of a project or, you know, kill a project. And by the time we submit an application, there's hundreds of thousands of dollars already invested in a project. There's the land purchase, or at least get it under contract. There's all of the consultant work up front that needs to take place. And the project is hanging its hat on the fact that this road mod be approved. If there was some sort of early decision making in that regard, I think that would go a long ways. And the potential, there's risks to Clark County as well. You know, the development activity could be reduced, potentially leading to a reduction in much needed residential development, not meeting GMA goals. As the road standards are met, and you mentioned this, are geared more towards greenfield development than they are towards infill development. I'm going to get to some Mr. Glimo here for an example, but I do want to get on to some possible solutions from a development standpoint. You know, we do talk about the standalone road modifications. Is there an opportunity for those standalone road modifications to be in advance of a development review application? I mean, can we get an earlier take on whether or not this could be done? Whether that's, you know, when we submitted the draft road modifications, they were free, and it was really nice to have that opportunity. Maybe there's an option to pay for an advanced road modification, especially when it means, hey, either if this doesn't go through, your project is not viable. Again, an early feedback process or some kind of other collaborative process between county staff and the applicant or the applicant's consultant, maybe a pre-app type of review. Maybe it happens at the pre-app. Maybe it's brought up by the consultant at the pre-app and there's a little more analysis done by staff at the pre-app level. Maybe a way to make more of the road modifications minor rather than technical or major. I understand that there's a safety aspect to that. That's maybe a little bit of a stretch. But if there's a way to, you know, lower the complexity of a road mod or the review complexity of a road mod, that might go a long ways as well. Now we're looking at a bigger picture, maybe some code changes to eliminate the need for some road modifications. We've always talked about how can we find any commonality with a lot of the road modifications that are submitted for and make it more prescriptive. Yes, I have on here remove transportation review entirely from small projects. The code is kind of, we're kind of tied there. It talks about, you know, any conditional use, site plan, land division, or anything like that requires a transportation review of some kind. The other jurisdictions have a trip threshold associated with needing a transportation review, you know, an increase in 10 average daily trips or, you know, one PM peak trip or something like that. Every project that goes through a site plan or a land division or something like that requires a transportation review in Clark County. And really, denials should be the last resort. If the road mod committee is recommending denial on something, I mean, pick up the phone, send an email, you know, let's start the dialogue. And if we have an earlier discussion about the merits of a road mod earlier on in the process, maybe we don't get to that point, you know. If it's such that, hey, look, we just can't do it, and here's the justification in code from staff that says that why this cannot happen, so be it. But we're often so far down the road when we hear that, that now our clients are so far invested that, I mean, that's a big loss. And we've been, you know, kind of extolling this change of mantra or this mantra to a how can we say yes? We talk about that with any other jurisdiction, especially Clark County. It should start with how can we make this work? How can we say yes to this? So that's really what it comes down to is county staff is a partner in every single project that we do in one way, shape, or form. They aren't necessarily an advocate, but they are certainly part of the process. And if we can keep that in mind as we move forward with this particular project, I mean, from a planning standpoint, which is what I am, we have great rapport with all the planners. They will say, hey, Mike, this doesn't work, or have you considered this, or this doesn't, you know, they will bring it to our attention. We're not finding that on the DE side with road modifications. And that's why I hope this, where this is going. So I've talked a lot. I've gotten through this. I would like to give Mr. Glimo an opportunity to simply talk about and I'm hoping the monetary aspect of a denial versus an approval as we move forward. So Eric, you want to move it?
Sure.
Don't say hold. Oh my.
No, that's just my own thoughts. Dan, thanks for the presentation on the current process, and Mike, good job summarizing the issue and the feedback we received right now from the public. This is an issue that we've heard so much about. Pretty much every engineer, planner, consultant that does work in Clark County has had challenges with this process. And we're here to try to find a solution. We want to make sure that this gets resolved at this meeting, or that we can at least get closer to a solution and work towards a collaborative and constructive process and solution. So one of the biggest issues that I've seen is that road modifications, the code has not changed in about the last 10 or longer years ago. We've had a few attempts to fix it, to make sure we had less road modifications, to make sure that we had more approvals, to make sure it was easier to go through the process. And it seems like most of that has been lost over the years. And I know a lot of it, there's changes in staff, COVID reset a lot of things. We're still trying to work back, I think, to where we were before that. But one of the biggest things I've noticed is most of the decisions that used to be approved are now being denied. The code hasn't changed. The process hasn't changed. Why are they getting denied when they weren't before? And not only that, but development's changed too. And maybe that's the challenge, is that the code that's in place is really meant more for greenfield development. And what we're seeing now with changes in growth plans is we're seeing more infill type development. The county doesn't have an infill code, but these infill projects are in developed areas. Things like circulation don't really even make sense for infill development where the road network's already set up. There's usually constraints. These projects have been passed over. So there's the code and the process is in direct conflict with the goals of middle housing, with low impact development and stormwater regulations, and with the goals and the densities that we're trying to achieve with the comprehensive plan. We're not going to get there unless we can balance competing interests. And a challenge that we see as consultants is we see the entire project. We see the economic feasibility, we see roads, we see stormwater, we see critical areas, and we're trying to balance all of these pieces. Every department, to make this type of development feasible, everyone has to have a little bit of give. You can make almost any project infeasible if you try to meet every single requirement from every single department. It doesn't work. I mean, I think sometimes people say, can't you just meet the code? You really can't because the project wouldn't happen. A few examples. There was a recent road modification for a project, and we didn't even ask for east-west circulation. We were told at the pre-op, and you know, we met the block length for east-west circulation. We were 584 feet, and I think we had to be 600 or 800 or something like that. So we met it. We were told we didn't need east-west circulation. Didn't even submit for east-west circulation. Came back with a road mod denial saying we need east-west circulation. Not even supported by code. It kind of came out of nowhere. That one decision impacted the project. It was marginally feasible before. And it's not just the road cost. So when you look at going through typical calculations for what's the proportionality, it's not about just proportionality. It's the impact to the layout. It's that road now impacted, I think, 5 or 6 lots. 2/3 of the property became undevelopable. It was less efficient design. It wasn't needed. Not only that, but if you look at where that road would have to be extended, it basically would go right through people's homes. There's no way to build that road. So it's these requests that used to be kind of a rubber stamp. It just had to be done to document why the change was done, just in case it comes up again, there's documentation. And now it was denied. And it's kind of defying logic a little bit and trying to figure out how to fix that process, how to move that needle. That's just one example. Another example, and this is the same project, but frontage improvements on a project where the entire corridor is built out. It has sidewalk, curb, gutter, everything. It was done as a capital facilities project by the county years ago. It was built out. You can kind of assume that the county gave themselves a road modification or built to the standards at the time. The area is primarily developed. Other new projects in the area have not built frontage improvements. I don't even think they had to do a road mod for it. It was just, you don't need to do it. It was an obvious decision during the process that, no, you're not going to pull out perfectly good frontage improvements to move them 2 feet over just because a standard changed from when it was fully developed. So it was kind of just rubber stamped. Well, in this case, it was denied again. And the cost of tearing out curb and gutter, moving it 2 feet over when there's no public benefit, and not only is there not public benefit, but it kind of confuses the driver where they have the curb line in one spot down the entire corridor. You're going to bump it out. You're going to push it back in. There's really no benefit. All of that was documented pretty well. And I'm not sure what the process looks like in the road mod committee, but I have some ideas from talking to quite a few staff on how that process works. And then another example was, and this comes up a lot, access and existing access. So we had a project, and this one eventually did get overturned, but it took about 4 months going back and forth with staff and the applicant. And it was for an adult a facility that helped treat disabled adults. And what was unique about this is it was an existing business. They were looking to add 500 square foot with a remodel, and they had a loop driveway. And the loop driveway was necessary because C-Tran, all the patients would come on C-Tran buses. And C-Tran needed the loop to get in and out from an arterial. So it was denied. Basically, what would have happened is we have to shut off one of the legs of the loop. What that means now is instead of a C-Tran bus making a nice loop through the site, and they would have to back out onto the arterial, or stop on the arterial and stop traffic. It was one of those things that it was like, I couldn't understand why it was denied. And we ended up working through its staff, but it took longer than it should have. And I guess what we're looking for is a way to make sure that those can be easily resolved. And one example is we had a very similar example in the city of Vancouver where they had two access points due to site constraints. They couldn't quite line up with the driveways across the street or intersection spacing. We sent an email with the challenges to city staff. 20 minutes later, we got an email back saying, yeah, that looks like the best location. Let's go with that. Done. It took an hour to resolve that issue. That issue was a little more challenging and had probably a little less justification than that loop drive that took months to resolve. And that's, I guess, the problem that we're trying to resolve and trying to get just more collaborative and better communication and constructive back and forth. One thing I did notice is the process. You ever play a whisper game where you talk, you mention something and you write your thing down and you tell it to, I would tell it to Mike, it would go around the table. And when it gets back to you, it's completely different. It's a telephone game, whatever. We called it the whisper game in the Midwest, but either way. What's happening right now is we're submitting our information to the development engineer. They are then compiling that information. That's a very long application form. And they have a bunch of them. Because the code is the way it is, there's a tremendous amount of road modifications that they have to go through. They're trying to summarize that. And then they're speaking the case to the road mod committee. The road mod committee is reviewing what the case that is basically compiled together by the development reviewer. And I might be wrong. This is what I've heard. So again, the whisper game maybe, or the telephone game maybe a little bit off. So this is what I'm hearing from staff. It goes to the road mod committee. The road mod committee then kind of makes a decision based on that. And then it gets back to the development review engineer, and then it gets back to the applicant. At no point in that process are they calling us for questions? Are they asking, well, I can say we don't submit road modifications that we think are going to get denied. If a client comes in with an unreasonable request, we are the first line of defense. That's not approvable. We have a better option. We're really only submitting things that we expect to get approved. And in the past, 95% of them were approved. Now, it's probably 25% of them are getting approved. And some are getting, again, they're getting denied for things we didn't even ask for. So I don't know if there's a better way to communicate. What I would have liked to have seen is if someone, before I got a denial again, a call asking what the situation was. I mean, it's pretty easy to explain. I've shown this to a few people that are not even as technical savvy. And they're like, yeah, that road's never going to get built that way. There's a house right in the way. Why are we requiring that? And it seems like common sense. But I'm not blaming staff because they don't have all that information. The only information they're getting to make that decision is a summary of a very long application that then goes to the committee. And the committee probably has so many of these to do and very limited time and resources. And things are getting lost in that process. That's what I suspect. So another thing I think we can do is we can look at fixing the code. There's a few obvious low-hanging fruit, and some of that is circulation, making sure that instead of – I think circulation is really outdated for urbanized areas. It makes sense for greenfield, but there should be things where you opt out. When you hit, like, existing development, you don't need to do a road modification every time you – it's obviously infeasible. Instead, we need to shift to something where we're looking at making sure we don't landlock other parcels, where other parcels have – reasonable access so they can get to the transportation network that they need to serve the site so they can develop. And that's kind of what we do in-house. I mean, circulation is almost one of those hoops you have to jump through, but what we're looking at is making sure that the other sites adjacent have the appropriate access to infrastructure and facilities. Also, some of the things that weren't intended to be literal, like some details, for example, a hammerhead turnaround. Okay, the hammerhead turnaround shows sidewalk all the way around. Okay, it's for one situation when there's homes all the way around it, and it's a public road. Well, private roads don't have the same requirements. That same detail is used for driveways. So you have a driveway with no sidewalk on it, but you have to do a road modification to not put sidewalk around the hammerhead because it's shown in a detail that wasn't intended for that purpose. A footnote on the detail say, or getting rid of it and going to the fire code that actually shows the dimensions. The purpose of that detail is showing the dimensional requirements so a fire truck can turn around in that detail and in that area. It's not a sidewalk detail, but it's we're having to do a road modification to vary from sidewalks that will never be used and don't serve any purpose at all. So those are low hanging fruit. Those are two. I have a few more of them, but I don't want to take too much more time. But I think that's a whole other committee we could look at to try to make your job, or the county's job, easier so we don't have as many road modifications.
Great. Thanks, Eric. I'd like to take this opportunity now to open this up for public comment. We're a little early when we do that, and that's why I wanted to try to get through my portion of this. And I really would like the public comment to focus on not repeating necessarily what we've already heard, but to provide some collaborative ideas out of the box thinking, so that we can you know help Mr. Kaler move towards some kind of solution to where these road modification. The process for road modifications and even the need for the road modification itself might be reduced in order to provide a little more clarity as far as these projects are concerned. So I'll go ahead and start in the room. And if there's anybody in here that has any public comment that they want to happen to say, or if you're just here for listening, and I'll open this up for both the public and for staff. You have a microphone? Awesome. Hey, if you can just say your name, please.
Valerie Yaskowski. Yeah, so I just want to echo some of what Eric had said and the issues that we're running into. We just recently had a denial on a project for a half width along our property boundary. And for that road to ever be extended, it's going to impact eight other properties, from home demolition to taking out swimming pools or having to cut off portions of structures. So we're being required to construct that half width. It's never going to go anywhere. Our adjacent properties are all 10,000 square foot lots and less, fully developed, with the exception of one property. So that's just another example of what we've been running into. And definitely want to reiterate that we've seen a lot of what Eric has spoken to.
Valerie, anybody else in the room? Chad?
Hi.
Just a moment.
Can I quickly follow up on what Val said? It's the same project.
Same project. Just
wants
to add to it.
Val
said same project.
Oh, okay. Ms. Nagler, you had something in addition to.
Yeah, Valerie was talking about one of the projects that we've been working on here. I just wanted to add quickly that we're trying to do this really good cottage project that really meets the intent of what a cottage development is, with really nice open space, very clearly delineated cottage clusters. And by having to put the half width all the way across the property, it basically ruins the whole layout. It makes it just so much worse of a project. And we lose several units, which is, you know, obviously a big deal for the client. I also just would like to quickly add that when we specifically asked for reasons why it was denied, the only reason given was that the plan as proposed didn't meet cross-circulation, but that was what we were applying for relief from. So the answer to why is it denied is it doesn't meet code, but we're asking for relief from that code. So it's like a circle that we just go in forever. So that's just what I wanted to add. That I've lost a lot of sleep over this project, let me tell you.
Great. Thank you, Ms. Anklage.
Chad Stewart with Ginn Group. First of all, Mike and Eric, you guys did a fantastic job of summarizing the issue, emphasizing the extent of the issue, and providing some very real-world examples. This is something that I lose a ton of sleep over, so I commiserate with the person who was just speaking. It's something that we live on a regular basis. Coincidentally, one of the examples you provided up there, Dan, as an approval for Creek South is ours. were ecstatic that we got to approval. We got to an approval through a process that extended approximately 3 months longer than we felt it should have. The result of that is about an additional $250,000 towards the project that we're paying now towards reserve fees for our general contractor as far as wet weather costs. So we got to an approval, fantastic. And the process that we were led through had a very real cost to us and ultimately to the end home buyer once this goes to market. Additionally, coincidentally, we were notified yesterday of a road mod denial. And so next Wednesday, we'll have the opportunity to go in front of the road mod review team for the reconsideration. So it's very real and relevant to me and to our company. Not to reiterate many of the great points that were made earlier, I think number one for me, just emphasize and recognize that there is a problem, number one. It's a solvable problem, number two. It's a solvable problem that we want to work hand in hand with staff, right? Not in an adversarial way, but in a collaborative way. Couple of specific items. There is a very strong need to have an understanding of how staff views the issue, be it one that's a road mod determination or not otherwise, as early as possible. Oftentimes, when we get in contract with the property owner, we have a feasibility period that's somewhere between 120 is the minimum I like to have. Maybe you get up to 180 days, but we have a tremendous amount of unknowns that we have to get to knowns or at least have an understanding of the risk before we have to start going hard with some very sizable amount of earnest money, right? So that's why there's a need during that same period that we're doing a pre-app to be able to have a conversation with decision makers around a road mod topic. I'm more than happy to pay the road mod fee to have that be part of the pre-app. I'm very happy to have a condition put upon that decision with the understanding that the entire scope of the project may not be known at the point of the pre-app. But there needs to the ability to have that conversation with the road mod decision makers, number one. Number two, as we get into the land use process itself, I would hope that there would be a process that allowed us to have that conversation directly with the road mod decision makers before a decision is reached, as opposed to coming in after a denial situation is already reached, right? To avoid the whisper game, avoid the telephone game, some type of process that allowed us to engage directly with them. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Stewart. Is there anybody else in the room? Seeing none, we'll move to online. Any public comment on this topic from any of the people that are attending online? Please hold up your hand. Use a little hand thing. You want to skip over to that other page? Shannon, I just want to make sure that we've got everybody. Nobody's hands up?
Mike, if I can, I'm going to jump in just for a minute here.
Absolutely. Go for it.
And all I want to be very clear about here is Eric's not alone. Mike's not alone. Chad's not alone. Valerie's not alone. We're not speaking up because we're trying to avoid being redundant. This is an issue. It needs to be fixed. And Seth, if you want to pile in, you guys need to hear this. This is not acceptable.
And also just to point out that often when we're preparing a road modification request, it's difficult to fully cover all the alternatives that we considered, some of the existing conditions that may drive what is the proposal. And so that dialogue and the ability to present that directly to the members of the road mod team, I think is very helpful and can eliminate much of the back and forth. Reduce the time frames that we're dealing with.
Yeah, we struggle when we do the road modifications with providing adequate information, but then sometimes what happens is we provide so much information to to make sure you're covering all your bases that it takes so long to review, and then the important points really get lost. I think some of the most effective ones are almost like bullet points. Like, here's why it's not practical. If you want more information on that, let's have a conversation. And trying to put everything in a very standard document and address these little criteria, it kind of gets lost. I mean, I've read these road modifications that we prepared trying to review. It's like, why is it so long? How come I read the whole thing and it's like six pages and I'm still struggling to find out what the real criteria is? Because you have to do it in a certain boilerplate format. So what we've tried to do is include like an email with it, with those bullet points, so it's easier to review. So when your staff have to go to the road mod committee to explain the points, it's kind of documented for them. But even then, there's usually questions that come out of it. So.
Well, thanks everyone. I don't see anybody else with anybody's hand raised on the online or in the room. Unless anybody else has anything for the good of the group, I think our discussion here is done. Mr. Kaler, I think you've heard a lot. Oh, sorry. Oh, David, sorry.
Good afternoon again, David Jardine, Public Works. In an effort to try and get you guys to where you need to be with the road modifications, yes, we have received many road mods with lots of text. Appreciate that, trying to explain your positions. I think when we look at road mods, the text is great, pictures are better. Maybe as we kind of move forward with the road mods, looking at laying out if all else was equal, if you met the code, what would it look like? If you laid it out so that you met the code, what does it look like? And then back it off from there to where you guys want to be. Say, well, if we put it here, we've tried it here, we met the code here, but there's an environmentally sensitive area right there and we can't put a road there. There's a buffer there. We can't put it there. So we've moved it, we've slid it over, and that's why we did that. And that's why we can't meet the code. The road mods themselves, when it's been my experience, when I've seen the road mods, many times it is a request for full relief from whatever code you're trying to modify. Road modifications are not an all or nothing deal. It is, like you said, it's a kind of a give and take, kind of a best solution, the minimum necessary to relieve the issue that you're trying to get around. So many times there's no, there's nothing that the development has offered up in the place of what they're requesting relief for. So like maybe a circulation, I hate the circulation one because that seems to always come up, but in circulation situations where there may not be enough room to get a public road, have you looked at maybe a multi-use path? Let's try and kind of meet everybody in halfway and, how does it fit the county? If we give you full relief and we get nothing in return, we built ourselves into a hole that, we're going to ask the developer right next door to try and do the same thing. They're going to come up, well, you didn't make them do it over here, so we got nothing going anywhere here. Kind of looking at it more as kind of a give and take, not an all or nothing kind of deal. And then also kind of just showing that you've tried to meet the code, or that you lay it out so you meet the code, but then you kind of describe, this is because of these things, this design does not work and can't work, and that's why we're asking for what we're asking for. So just kind of a little more detail, maybe a drawing or a sketch that helps us to understand a little bit more about that you guys did look at trying to meet the code first and that you're backing it off because of whatever elements. And that I believe that that may help with the decision making and reduce the number of questions and get you guys to where you need to be.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Jardine. Appreciate those thoughts. Anybody else from staff? Ms. Nagelich?
Sorry, Val, I'm going off script. I just would like to lightly push back on what we just heard. We have been told by staff not to submit anything that shows that we can meet all of the codes, because then the answer will be, great, please meet all the codes then. Like that. That's like two very different things that I'm hearing from staff now on how to approach providing information for a road mod. And kind of thinking about, going back to cross circulation, this particular site that we're working on, it's just a small infill site. It's surrounded by homes. There is no purpose for cross circulation to be provided. Providing a public trail or anything into the site would just be a dead end into a private cottage development. It wouldn't make any sense there. So I'm not sure if that is necessarily the solution. It also sounds like potentially that's an issue of doing things that aren't necessarily required by code in order to get an approval, which I think was kind of touched on earlier, potentially about extractions. I also just would like to say that I used to work for a city in Colorado as a city planner, and we didn't have road mods. The staff just used their best judgment. So there's an out-of-box solution for you. Get rid of the whole process.
Thank you, Ms. Nagelich.
Thank you.
Not seeing anybody else. We've heard from you, you've heard from us, we've heard from staff. I think that this has been very collaborative. We do have 15 minutes left, actually 10 minutes left. Is there anybody, and I should probably turn this back over to Ryan, but since I'm talking, is there anybody, any other public comment outside of what we were talking about today?
Did staff have any comments on the discussion that they wanted to add any other feedback?
I'd love to hear from them. And maybe we leave it at this. Moving forward, we would love to see you back. We would love to see staff back. We'd like you guys to take a couple of months, maybe after the holidays. We invite you back and see how this process is going to work moving forward. I think everybody in here was encouraged that there was some kind of reconsideration meeting that was allowed. But I think that you also clearly heard that we can't wait for a denial before we, hear from the committee or from staff that the earlier the better as far as this is concerned. We, the development community, we would be more than happy to help you in any way, shape, or form. Bounce things off of us, say, hey, how about this, how about that? Again, we're partners in this endeavor, and hopefully we can come to a solution here sooner than later. Projects are still going to keep coming forward. Road mods are going to still be submitted, Mr. Jardine. That's just the way it's going to go. So any last thoughts? I'll be done.
Yeah, I would like to ask one question to staff. So looking at one of the examples that I mentioned earlier, the one with the cross circulation and the frontage improvements, it's basically sitting on hold. There's probably about $10,000 a month in interest while it sits on hold trying to get things resolved. What are the next steps? What should we do? This project's not economically feasible. This is one where if we go with what's requested, if we put the public road through, we got to demolish a bunch of homes that are offsite for this road to go through. And this new layout basically took a project that was marginally, economically feasible, and now it's about $800,000 underwater. It's just going to stop. This is prime development of what we're looking to get with middle housing. So what do we do in that situation? Are we, do we, can we meet with staff? Can we use it as a prototype to maybe look at how we can fix the code, look at the process? Or, you know, I was told before, submit anyway, and you can go through an appeal. That's really not collaborative. It's not constructive. That's going to take way more staff time than having a conversation up front. Going to appeal is a last resort. So I don't think that's a viable solution. What we really want to do is maybe sit down with staff again, you know, one-on-one, maybe in person, go through some of these things, brainstorm them. Let's be a team. Let's try to figure out a solution on how to bring this type of housing to the market, how to meet the goals of the comprehensive plan, and what needs to happen with the road modifications and other pieces, not just road modifications, but stormwater, all these other pieces of the code that have changed. You know, we've changed one piece of the code and the other codes are behind. What, and processes are behind. So what do we do? That's my question. What's my next step in this situation? I think a lot of people in here are in the same position.
Okay. I was just going to add, you know, for process improvement, I think it's going to probably take some investigation on our side to say what is possible. And I know you mentioned potentially having it be a funded option. I mean, that certainly would maybe accelerate or make it more appropriate to, rather than, you know, have a draft mod review that consumes staff time that really we're so overwhelmed with other plan reviews, it's not feasible. So I think for process improvement, that's probably something we can discuss internally, maybe identify what are viable options and then bring it back to advisory board for your consideration. Yeah.
Fantastic. Thank you. Yes, you need to speak into a mic.
Some of these projects are quite a bit of money, feasibility, land cost, building cost, everything. Is there a way that we can meet with the road mod committee in person?
I think that's one of those things that staff will consider.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Thank you.
All right. So I would like to make sure that there is a follow-up to this. So I think, and I've talked with members of the development community as well, the ones that keep coming back are, you know, some sort of a standalone road mod process where it's after pre-app, but before the full land use application. I think that would go a long way to addressing a lot of concerns out there. It may not be possible with every road mod, but I think it is possible with the majority, the early feedback, and then some of the other process improvements as well. So let's make sure that we reconvene on some of those questions in a few months. And
I might throw out there February meeting. That's November, December, January, February. That's 3 months from now. Just as a tentative date. If you can meet sooner, great. If you need more time, just let us know.
Thank you. Well, I think we've kind of gone around and around with asking for public comment, both about this issue and not related to this issue. So I probably won't ask again unless somebody really jumps out before I
just one last thing, Ryan. I'd like to thank everyone for both showing up in person and for showing up online. Again, it's a very important. I think that is a testament to the importance that people feel this topic is. We would encourage anyone, both staff and the development community, to provide their comments directly to Deeb that we can pass along to staff. If something comes up, again, we're looking for out-of-the-box solutions to this and in a collaborative approach to something that we're just, you know, we have to deal with. Let's make it as best for staff and us as possible.
Yeah, I'll echo that. Thanks for all the participation and the interest. Yeah. I think this is by far the largestly attended Deeb meeting I have ever been a part of. So, well, with that, we are adjourned.